We have a guest on this week, so do you want to be professional and introduce the show properly?
To impress him?
Yeah. Oh, you forgot his name.
I forgot the edition of the book that we brought here.
Well, why don't you introduce the radio show?
You're listening to, hold on. My cans are bad. You're listening to 7 Second Delay. Did I get that right?
Yep. So far, so good. Yeah. Very good.
But why are they listening? Isn't that a more interesting question? That's one that you're afraid to ask, isn't it? Why do you think people are listening, Ken?
For the mirth and entertainment?
Close. We'll give you partial credit for
okay.
that.
Okay. Yeah, tell me why.
They love them train wrecks. People love train wrecks. Wait, Irwin's signaling to me. Are these better cans?
I don't know.
Yeah.
They're different.
Okay. Excuse me, Kenny.
Yeah, no problem. Hey, I noticed you brought in a copy of your new toy.
My new game.
Mr. Magnate.
Yeah.
But you didn't bring one for me.
You're getting yours. You're getting yours.
What? How come
it's a game that it'll be on Kickstarter in a few weeks, but it's a game that whose name we can't reveal here at the station.
Yeah. Well, we can call it's S happens.
Right? Oh, I see. That's how you can say it?
No, you can say ish happens.
Not like S happens.
No, ish. Ish is better.
Do people know what that means?
Yeah, because in rap songs, the S word gets flipped around and it sounds like ish. So ish has become...
Wouldn't it sound like tish?
No, it doesn't.
Well, that's a whole other show, isn't it? What words sound like when you say them backwards? That will be fascinating. Maybe we'll do that next week. Maybe we'll have Tim English back.
Hey!
What a great segue,
yeah. Tim English is our guest tonight.
You finally have your Sounds Like Teen Spirit show. You've been talking about this for months.
Welcome, Tim.
Thanks a lot, guys. It's a pleasure to be here.
What's going on with your mic here?
There we go. I think you might have to say that again. Thanks a lot, guys. He said, it's a pleasure to be here. So we know this for a fact. He's never heard the show.
No, he has heard the show.
I have heard it, yeah.
So Tim's written a book called Sounds Like Teen Spirit, Stolen Melodies, Ripped Off Riffs, and the Secret History of Rock and Roll.
And you ate this book up in one big gulp.
Yeah, because I've been very interested in this topic for many, many years.
Now, suppose I was sitting, Tim, suppose I was sitting next to you on a plane, and I asked you what the book was about. How do you describe it in one or two sentences?
It's all the cases of songs that appear to have borrowed their melodies from earlier songs all through the years with rock and roll, going back to the 50s with Bill Haley, Rock Around the Clock, took its first melody from Hank Williams, Move It On Over, all the way up to recent times with controversy with Robin Thicke, controversy with Sam Smith. So it goes all through the decades.
Those are pretty serious charges you're leveling against Bill Haley.
Yeah, well, it's...
I hope you can back those up, buddy.
Well, he won't. I don't think he'll care one way or the other at this point, but the guy who wrote the song admitted that he took that from Hank Williams.
And one of the really interesting ones that I saw in there was John Lennon's Imagine, which has an uncanny resemblance to a song that his long-lost dad recorded and put out to try to cash in on Beatlemania.
This is a really bizarro case where when John Lennon got famous, his father came back and went to the his estranged father went to the tabloid press in England and said, "Hey, my son's a millionaire, and I'm here washing dishes in some hotel outside of London, and why is he ignoring me?" So a producer named Tony Cartwright decided, what better thing to do with this guy than put him in front of a 30-piece orchestra and make a record and try to cash in on John's fame. And they put out a record called That's My Life, My Love and My Home in late 65. And believe it or not, the chords and the sort of stately melody of the song sound eerily like John's Imagine.
Did John ever publicly address it?
No. This is just one of those oddball things.
Although he might have called it an homage if he had, right?
Yeah, it's more just like they said that John would play his father's song for friends as a goof at home, you know, because he was kind of amused by it. One story says he was amused. Another story says he had Brian Epstein kill the record as it was gaining traction, gaining popularity. But no, he never addressed it. He had a real up-and-down relationship with his dad, Freddie.
All right, so
Ken, if your dad put out a record, would you have tried to kill it? Use all your influence in the radio business? I think you would have.
I would have.
Yeah, it would have eaten you up.
Yeah, it's an embarrassment.
Yeah, it would have eaten you up. I would have supported my dad 100%.
Oh yeah. Well, Freddie Lennon had nice sound effects and he had a whole orchestra. Let's hear the beginning of "That's My Life" by Freddie Lennon.
It sounds a little Across the Universe.
All right, now let's hear the beginning of Imagine.
Wait, I want to hear the rest of Freddie.
It's just the opening chords.
Oh, is this the opening chords?
Yeah.
I'm so curious about the rest of Freddie Lennon.
Okay, we can go back and hear Freddie
Lennon. I mean, we've all heard Imagine.
It is kind of cool to hear him... his vocal styling.
Yeah, let me hear.
I'll pick up my story that I once left out. I sang with the tides and lived on dreams. I've watched the sunrise over every ocean.
That's John Lennon's father?
That's
my life, that's my love.
Yeah, sounds like John Lennon.
Yeah.
John Lennon sounds like him.
I might have a new favorite Lennon.
Freddie?
Freddie. What else has Freddie released? Was that it?
He had that and a B-side, and I think that was about it. He was quite a guy. He was still fathering children. He gave John a couple of half-brothers.
Oh, I didn't know that.
1969-70, yeah. So
fantastic.
He's quite a guy.
It's good to have a hobby.
Yeah.
And so you think Imagine either consciously or unconsciously.
Yeah, I would have to say it would be unconsciously, but it is kind of curious to say the least that this great song, you know, may have been at least partly inspired by a cheesy knockoff.
From your own dad.
Yeah, Freddie never took legal action against John for Imagine.
No, he didn't.
Did Freddie here's a question. Did Freddie live to hear Imagine?
Yes, he did. Freddie died in 76, I think. I think John hadn't talked to him in many years. I think he made a phone call a couple of days before he died.
So, Andy, do we want to invite people to call in?
What would they say?
You guys have a great show.
What would a caller say?
Let's find out. Hi, you're on
How
the air.
How would we find out?
Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, I get you. Put him on the air.
Hey. First-time caller, long-time listener. Can't believe I got through.
Thanks, man. Thanks, brother.
Thank you.
I really think you should play Andy something off the Mouth Sounds album.
Mouth Sounds?
Yeah, from Neil...
Oh, Neil Cicierga. All right. Yeah, whatever. Sorry.
I didn't know that reference.
It's a mashup album.
I don't know what that means.
Never mind, Andy.
I'm keen to learn. I'm here to learn. Wait, so was that a prank call that I didn't even know?
No.
I didn't even recognize?
It technically was not a prank call. It was just kind of off topic.
That's kind of refreshing.
Yeah.
Not a prank call.
Yeah, it's great. Tim, do you want to explain to Andy Breckman here what a mashup is?
So we take two songs, two recordings.
With you so far, gotcha.
And
let's say, for example, I'm a Believer by the Monkees and I'm a Believer by Neil Diamond.
No.
Well, it's the same song.
So. I got you. Oh, different songs. I got you. Have to be different. Gotcha.
What's that one that Kid Rock did where he took Werewolves of London and Sweet Home Alabama?
Oh, yeah.
Something along that line.
Yeah, Northern Michigan.
That would qualify, I guess.
Yeah.
I got you. And then you mash them together.
Yeah.
Well, we're not gonna go there. We're not going to.
It sounds so horrible that I'm surprised it's not featured more on WFMU.
They were in their day.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Oh, good.
We're kind of past the mashup golden era now.
Yeah.
Well, here's one. Here's one that there was legal action on. It was Johnny Cash's Folsom Prison Blues,
right?
And many years earlier, an arranger named Gordon Jenkins.
Yeah, I know Gordon Jenkins from Sinatra, of course.
That's
Sinatra
right.
Recordings.
Yes, that's right. He arranged the greatest Frank Sinatra record ever.
In the Wee Small Hours.
The Future. Well, I was thinking of The Future.
Okay. Yeah.
Off of Trilogy.
Yeah.
But Tim English is our guest, author of Sounds Like Teen Spirit. Tim, why don't you tell us the story of this?
Well, Johnny Cash wrote Folsom Prison Blues kind of around this Gordon Jenkins song in the 50s called Crescent City Blues. And if you listen to him, it's basically the same melody. Johnny's song became a hit all over again when it was included on his Live at Folsom Prison album in 68-69. And around that time, Gordon Jenkins sued Johnny Cash for ripping off his song. And I believe they reached an out-of-court settlement on that.
Can I hear a little snippet of both?
You don't even need to hear both.
I'll decide.
Here's Crescent City Blues by Gordon Jenkins.
Okay.
I hear the train a-comin'.
Oh, my God.
It's rollin' round the bend.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And I ain't been kissed, Lord, since I don't know when. The boys in Crescent City.
Oh, my God.
Don't seem to know I'm here.
Right, we don't even need to play Folsom Prison Blues. It's just so obvious.
Well, I know he didn't rip off this song because in the movie Walk the Line,
yeah.
You saw him writing this song. There was a scene where you saw Johnny Cash writing.
That was Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah, Joaquin Phoenix. And you saw him writing Folsom Prison Blues. And
well, he wrote the words to it.
And
anyway.
He was, but you saw him coming up. You saw him working out the melody in this movie. Unless you're saying, Tim, that the movie lied to us.
Oh, you know, a biopic and not 100% true.
What?
Shudder.
I wonder if it's too late to get my money back on that one. So let's hear a little Folsom Prison just to make your jaws drop.
I hear the train a-coming.
Oh, my God.
It's rolling around the bend.
Poor Johnny Cash.
Well, that's indefensible.
Yeah.
You can't defend it.
So how did they work that one out, Tim?
He got Gordon Jenkins sued Johnny, and they settled that, of course.
If you buy the record now, a new pressing of it, does it have Gordon Jenkins' name?
That I'm not sure about, whether his name had to go on or whether he just gave him a lump sum. That I'm not sure about.
And then another one that's been very big in the news lately has been the Spirit song Taurus. And they just recently sued Led Zeppelin, didn't they, for Stairway to Heaven?
They did. The estate of Randy California, who's the guy who wrote Taurus, which is kind of an instrumental.
So you're saying it took him 40 years to be sure?
Yeah.
40 years to be sure that the songs were similar. They played it for 40 years.
To bring a lawsuit against a band as big as Led Zeppelin, you need to hire lawyers. You need to have some money.
But 40 years.
But... Well, Randy California passed away, I think, in 97.
Yeah.
And at the time, he was kind of destitute, from what I understand.
But couldn't you go into any legal office and say, look, here's the evidence, and you can take the case on contingency and take 30%?
Possibly you could, yeah. But it for whatever reason, it never happened. I think the lawyer for the family now explains that it didn't happen earlier because they didn't have the funds to hire anybody. But... you know, in recent years, this has become a controversy, and they did sue about 2 or 3 years ago. And it's not the whole song of Stairway to Heaven, but you could say it's that the guitar part at the beginning is very similar to Taurus.
Did Led Zeppelin contest it?
Yeah, they're contesting it. Timmy Page, they say what everybody says in these cases. Sam Smith said it. Coldplay said it when they got sued. I never heard that song. Well, you know, it doesn't matter really from a legal standpoint whether you heard it or not. The important thing is that you could have heard it.
Didn't Spirit like open for them
yeah.
or something like
wait,
that?
Wait, wait,
yeah.
wait. It doesn't matter legally if you mean I don't have to prove that you heard my song? What if it's just me and I have a song on my little self-released mini record label.
Well, something like that. Most bands or songwriters have a policy. They put up a wall around themselves and say, we don't listen to any outside material. And so that if some guy out in Montana says, hey, you ripped off my song that I sent you
two years ago. Submitted to you. Yeah.
They can say, sorry.
So if it's not
policy,
on the...
goodbye, go home.
But Andy, like you don't accept any spec screenplays.
Well, I don't do that because I'm lazy.
Yeah. But don't you go out of your way to like not read any screenplays that people send?
Well, there is a legal reason to do it. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, it's an access rule, and it's the first part of what you have to prove in a copyright suit. So
let's hear this. So this is Spirit.
This is Spirit Song Taurus.
Okay.
Oops, that wasn't part of the song. Pretty close.
What do you think? What do you think legally?
There's Stairway to Heaven.
Oh.
Pretty damn close.
He said in the...
What is that little guitar riff worth? Is that a $20 million guitar riff?
It could be. I mean, think of how many albums that's been on and reissues and how many of those.
You mean Stairway to Heaven?
Yeah. Not the whole song, of course, but part of it. He said in the reissue of the Spirit album Randy California did in the 90s, and people were always asking him, hey, you ripped off Stairway to Heaven with that song. Why did you do that? And he's like, no, man.
Oh, I see.
My song came 4 years earlier.
So, Andy, I know you don't want to invite listeners to call, but I thought that if people had ideas,
I don't care what listeners do.
Yeah. So they're free to call.
They can do whatever they want.
Yeah, they can call 201-209.
It's a free country.
209-9368.
Do whatever the hell you want. Call, don't call. Doesn't impact me in the slightest.
If you have ideas for sound-alike songs.
Yeah.
Here's one that I love. Oh, go ahead.
Hey, Tim, do you think I have a case against Don McLean?
What is your beef with Don exactly?
Well, I was there. I was with him. I was hanging with him.
You opened for him.
Well, I used to open for him, but I was hanging with him when he was writing American Pie, and I contributed. Look, I mean, the idea of the song was his, but I contributed Drove My Chevy to the Levee. It was my idea that the levee be dry instead of moist.
Ken can't keep a straight face during this. I don't know.
You know what? Why bother the guy? He's got his own problems now.
I think dry worked better than moist.
Oh, yeah, I know. Although Don was like up all night pacing the floor.
You know, you reminded me, though, of a similar case. What you guys remember there was a singer named, I think her name was Lori Liebman, and she, when they were writing Killing Me Softly, his song, she had that line referring, I believe, to Don McLean's American Pie. And the guys wrote the song. It was a huge hit and everything, and she never got a dime out of it, even though she had come up with the idea for it, at least the title and the idea for it.
Wow. She deserved it if it was hers.
Don McLean always causing problems,
you should be suing. Yeah. You should be suing Lori Liebman, Andy.
He's the bane of my existence.
Well, we have a call.
He is to me what I am to Ken.
Hi, you're on the air.
Good evening, everyone. Great show.
Thanks.
I believe I got through.
Thanks. Who do you like better, me, Tim, or Ken?
Don't mess this
tonight,
up.
Tonight, I think it's going to have to be one of the Kens.
One of the Kens. All right.
Well, it's like Tim and Ken.
Tim and Ken.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just two quick questions. One, I guess, how common does like a riff or a melody have to be where it can't be protected? And then two, I mean, couldn't one, if you really dug into old classical music, probably find all of these melodies in little snippets of the pieces? And so they would be probably part of public domain access at that point?
Well, I actually have a chapter in the book on songs that came out of public domain. And, you know, I think you make a good point. If you are going to steal a melody, steal one that's in the public domain. You have some great melody writers, so like Bach and Brahms, you know, and take one of their melodies instead of one where you're going to get we're going to get sued. You can't get sued over chord progression. You can't get sued over a title. And the reason so many of these get settled out of court is because if you get it in front of a jury of non-musicians, you're on a very slippery slope as to what somebody thinks is a ripoff and other people do not. You know, it's very subjective call sometimes.
Yeah, right. So that's interesting. So these are jury cases when they do get brought to court?
Yeah, some a lot.
Was it George Harrison a jury case?
Yeah, George was a judge decided that one. Yeah, but the Robin Thicke, Pharrell was a jury, and the you know they were
that must have been some happening jury room.
Yeah, yeah.
I bet they were twisting the night away.
Well, who knows what do you who gets on a jury? Or you know, it's a good likelihood they're not going to have any musical expertise.
Yeah, maybe a couple of squares get on the jury? A couple of L7s.
All right, thanks.
Dig the new sound.
Thanks, caller.
Yeah, there's always that danger.
We're talking to Tim English.
I think juror number six is an L7.
We're talking to Tim English, author of Sounds Like Teen Spirit.
I'm talking to him too, Ken.
I said we. Yeah. Yeah. And Tim, as I was going through the book...
You're sort of talking more Adam, if you don't mind my saying.
Well, I'm trying to do a radio show.
Yeah, I'm talking with him.
Yeah.
Point
well taken.
Thanks, Ken.
Tim, I was checking out a lot of the couplets that you mentioned in the song, and this was one that really blew my mind that I was not aware of, which was Astrid Gilberto's song, Maria Quiet. And Andy, let's see if you can tell which song this
okay.
is.
Okay. I'm a believer.
No. Here it comes.
They say that.
You know what it is?
That little riff? I guess it does sound familiar. Oh. That's Deep Purple?
Yeah, Deep Purple ripped off Astrid Gilberto.
No, I don't hear that.
Come on, get out of here. Listen to this.
Why can't these chord progressions just be in the air?
Not this part, right here.
I know what you're talking about. No, I don't.
Come on!
It's a very subjective call.
Wait, do you think this was a conscious?
I'm not saying it's conscious.
Well, I think it's just in the air. Do you think Deep Purple is sitting around listening to Bossa Nova?
No.
What do you mean? Then explain. Then go ahead. Then how did it happen?
I don't know.
It could be coincidence or maybe not. I mean, we just don't know. In any of these cases, you can't know really whether it was conscious or not.
Look, I'm a comedy writer. I do that for a living. And sometimes just jokes are in the air and ideas right. for sketches are in the air.
Yeah.
That's what you say when somebody accuses you of stealing their joke.
Yeah, it's in the air.
Have you ever been accused of stealing
yes.
a joke?
Yes.
Well, that's fair.
Tell us the best joke accusation.
I wrote a sketch for SNL. It was with Alec Baldwin. The sketch was... It was Christmas morning, and the kids come downstairs and to the chimney. They come down to the living room early Christmas morning, and there are no gifts. There are no gifts left under the tree, and the parents are as baffled as the kids. The parents are as hurt and upset as the kids that Santa Claus didn't show up. Mm-hmm. That was the idea for the sketch, and apparently there had been a similar sketch or a similar one-act play performed in upstate New York some years earlier, and I was out of the blue just called by NBC wow. lawyers and had to, over the phone, I was sworn in over the phone, and I gave testimony over the phone about how I thought of my idea.
Did you give him the it's in the air defense? Because that works every time.
I said, it's just like the Bossa Nova song and Smoke on the Water. I said, are you familiar with Deep Purple?
All right, we have a call.
All right.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, my name's Bobby.
You love the show.
Hey, Bobby.
Originally from Madison, New Jersey.
All right.
Long time listener and so forth. So we have a question, and the question is there any song that, you know, maybe it was so bad or it just was that the people were so happy to be ripped off that maybe they even, the settlement was that they paid the people who ripped them off. Like, is there any song that, you know, that?
Yes, there is, and I'm going to play that one right now.
It's Chuck Berry and...
No, here it is.
No, it's...
Here it is.
All right.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha.
I think it's Bob Dylan ripped them off.
And then Bob Dylan. Rainy Day Women.
Oh, you know what?
What?
Wait, you know what? Is this in your book? You've got to update your book. You know why?
Why?
Well, I'll wait for Ken to hit pause. Okay. In the new release, the new...
Chronicles.
The new Chronicles, the new outtakes from... From his double album.
Those three albums.
Blonde on Blonde,
right. Yeah. Okay, you can hear, have you heard those?
Yeah.
You can hear Dylan in the studio with the drummer suggesting that opening.
Really?
Yes. There's a whole little routine. He tried it out. Dylan said, I love it, and let's go with it. And you hear it. It didn't come from Dylan at all.
That's a tape loop on the Napoleon song. It's
you hear that? I don't know.
Because the Napoleon song also, the Napoleon song came out like a year before.
No.
Wasn't?
It didn't. No, Kent, you might be onto something. Because I tried to nail down, it's really weird with how everything is so documented, trying to nail down when Blonde on Blonde was released in the United States.
How can that be a secret?
It's not a secret, but to try to actually nail it down, it's a little more controversial than you
would
expect.
Well, I was born in 1955. Why don't you ask me?
Well,
why don't you ask me when Blonde on Blonde appeared in the stores? Why don't you ask me?
When did it?
I have no idea. But you know what I was thinking of with our caller, to respond to our caller? Tell me if this isn't true. Oh, wait. Don't tell me if this isn't true. Let me believe it's true.
Okay.
That when Chuck Berry sued John Lennon, part of the deal was... I don't want money. I just want you to record three of my songs.
Right.
Isn't that the what
it was? I don't know if Chuck actually said that. It was his publisher. Yeah, and that's true, though, that he ended up having to record three of the publisher's songs.
Yeah.
One on Walls and Bridges and two on Rock and Roll in 75.
Let's play that one.
So that's an example of an artist kind of being happy that he was ripped off. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, he got some financial recompense out of it.
He got John Lennon to sing three of his songs.
Yeah, that was Chuck Berry's You Can't Catch Me, which had the line about Here Come Old Flat Top.
Well, yeah, that's...
So let's hear that.
Deal with a powerful mood and some hideaway wings. Pushing on the button and you will hear her sing. Now you can't catch me. Baby, you can't catch me.
Did Chuck Berry's song begin with
No.
Flat Top?
You get too close, it's next verse, I think.
Gone like a cool. New Jersey Turnpike in the wee hours. I was rolling.
That wasn't the next verse, Ken.
No, it's coming up.
You were, what's the opposite of being right?
You just talked over it.
Oh, I did?
Yeah, come on, Flat Top. He was moving up with me. Then
there you go. Here come on, Flat Top. He was grooving up with me.
And what was the Lynn line? Here come on, Flat Top. He was grooving up slowly.
We don't need to hear that. Everybody knows it.
Yeah. It's interesting, though. John got himself in trouble by telegraphing that because he gave an interview where he talked about his songwriting method. And by the way, for amateur songwriters, take note. I mean, his songwriting method was to, he would call it paradise another song and then change it around and come up with his own song. And he said in the case of Come Together, he was paradising Chuck Berry's You Can't Catch Me. And obviously the publishers noticed and it turned into a lawsuit. The Flat Top line was not helpful either, kind of telegraphing that.
Well, now that we've revealed John Lennon's songwriting secrets, there'll never be another bad song written.
True.
It's going to be the golden age of songwriting now that we have opened the gates.
We have another call.
I don't think so.
I think so. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
How you doing?
Hey, we do have another call.
Yeah.
It's this guy.
Yeah.
I was hoping this guy would call.
This effing guy.
Yeah.
How you doing?
How you doing, brother? Call him brother.
Hey, brother.
He might be black.
Thank you.
Just in case he's black. Call him brother.
He doesn't sound black.
You never can tell. It's always safe. Play it safe. Call him brother.
Hello, brother.
Hey, brother. Thanks for calling.
You're on the air.
Thank you. Yeah, I just want to say, you know, being a musician myself, I honestly, whenever something comes up with this... copywriting, you know, being sued for the musical infringement and all that. I can't help but feel empathy for these artists because, you know, trying to make your own music, you couldn't have possibly, nobody on this planet could have possibly heard every song in the world. You know, I know that's a bit, you know, general, but it's, you know, it's kind of hard to just do your own thing and be worried about what everybody thinks about copying. Yeah. I mean,
everyone's influenced by something.
Yeah.
That's right.
Except for me.
And you make a good point, bro.
Because
brother. Yeah.
Brother, yeah.
Because
he says he's not black, but you're never 100% sure.
If you're trying to write a song, I mean, it's kind of like the pitcher goes out to the mound in the ninth inning with bases loaded and the manager tells the pitcher, you know, don't walk him, but don't give him anything good to hit either. You know, you're trying to thread that needle between something that's familiar and pleasing to the ear and something that's original.
So if you're trying to write a song, keep the pitches low and outside. Is what you're saying.
Yeah.
To continue
the
analogy.
Go for the corners.
Yeah, go for the corners.
Yeah, I mean, well putting restrictions on what you're doing, you know, it's really, it just defeats the whole purpose of being creative.
Yeah, and if you think about trying to avoid sounding like anything else, it's going to destroy your creative
process.
You
know, my advice to you, if you don't mind me giving you some advice, is don't even try.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you, brother.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, is this me?
It's you now. Hello, brother.
Hey, brother.
Hi. Hi, this is Michael from Boston.
Hey, Michael.
Okay. Hey, Mike.
Sounds white, but you're never sure.
Thanks, Andy. Whatever. I had a couple of questions, a couple of examples, and then a question. I have two songs in mind. Both are by Devo.
Okay.
One, of course, has to be Whip It, which is a ripoff of the riff from Pretty Woman by Roy Orbison. And the other one is Uncontrollable Urge, which is I Want to Hold Your Hand.
Okay, and what was the Roy Orbison song with Whip It?
Pretty Woman.
Pretty Woman. You know what? When you said that, I got it in my head. You're exactly right. But
yeah,
that's
my question is, I'm sorry, just with Devo, my question is, what do you think about bands that take a riff and recontextualize it, like do something new with it on purpose? Like rethink it?
Well, let's hear Whip It and Oh Pretty Woman for a second here. Is this the part?
No, it's the da-na-na-na-na. You'll hear it. Yeah.
That part, da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's pretty close.
Okay, Michael.
So the question is, what do you think of bands that take a riff like that and recontextualize it? My answer is I'm too important to even bother coming up with an opinion. What's your answer?
Well, I mean, certain riffs, like the riff from Satisfaction, I mean, that's been done over probably a million times, too, with little changes in it, you know? I mean, you can certainly do that.
That seemed pretty blatant to me.
Michael, what else is on your mind?
Not that much. I just, in terms of Devo, who basically sell themselves as a concept band, I think the Cars did it too. A lot of the new wave bands took those riffs intentionally and like turned them into something different and more plastic, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you think there's any kind of actual commentary there, rather than it just being like blatant theft.
Were they asking listeners? I mean, obviously, the Roy Orbison song is an iconic song. Were they asking listeners to reference that song subconsciously when they wrote it and produced it?
Yeah, to maybe make the comparison. I don't know.
They knew listeners would recognize it.
I have to say, in listening to Whip It many times, I never made the connection. But, you know, like we say, I mean, these things are very subjective. What one person hears something, another person doesn't.
Well, now that it's been pointed out to you, you'll always make the connection.
Yes, I will.
So you're welcome.
And for that, we will never forgive you, Michael.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, brother. You're never sure.
The one between Bob Dylan and John Lennon, Norwegian Wood and Fourth Time Around, that was an interesting story because I think they each accused the other one of ripping the other one off, right?
Well, Lennon, when he heard the song, certainly thought that Dylan was making fun of him, you might say.
Huh.
I heard it the exact reverse.
Well, there is a story. Al Kooper tells a story that's the reverse, which he says that Dylan played him Fourth Time Around and said that the Beatles had – that he had played it for the Beatles and the Beatles had taken it from him. When we recorded, Norwegian Wood was recorded a couple months before. Dylan went to Nashville and recorded Fourth Time Around. The songs are supposed to, Four Time Around lyrics are supposed to mention songs that Lennon had supposedly done in Dylan's style, like I'm a Loser and You've Got to Hide Your Love Away. And there's no reference to Fourth Time Around in the lyrics to the song. So, you know, the idea was it was sort of, you know, and there's a line in there about a crutch, too. The idea was that it was sort of saying you're taking my songs or you're doing songs in my style, which was true.
Well, let's hear a little bit of each.
Here's Fourth Time Around by Bob Dylan.
Don't waste your words, they're just lies. I cried, she was dead.
All right, now let's hear Norwegian Wood.
The similarity here is just more tonal, right?
No, it's melodic.
Yeah, it's, and they're both waltzes, I believe, and they're,
and the vocal melody is really close.
And the stories are vaguely similar too.
I once had a girl, all should I say?
I say score for Bob Dylan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Welcome, brother.
Oh, thank you. I just had a suggestion. I think this is incredibly obvious, but maybe it's worth noting that it's probably the most egregious one. It's the song Elves by the Fall.
Elves by the Fall.
Oh, yes. Elves by the Fall.
Song with different words.
Which is the same as what with different words?
It's a Stooges song, but with just different words.
What's the Stooges song? Which Stooges song?
Well, I can't remember. It's one of the famous ones. Like, if you listen to the first 2 seconds of Elves, you'll know which Stooges song it is, but I can't remember.
It's I Want to Be Your Dog.
Yeah, I guess it is I Want to Be Your Dog.
Yeah.
I just wasn't sure.
Wow, you're right.
Yeah.
All right, thank you, brother.
This is very exciting. You know what's exciting about that call? Tim English, the expert on all this, is sitting there jotting down notes.
So that's...
We're taking Tim English to school.
That's Elves by the Fall.
We're taking Tim English into uncharted waters.
I'm learning new ones all the time.
You're learning new ones. Tim English isn't too young to learn.
Wow, I never knew that one either. That's a good one. That's a really good one.
If I cared a little more, that would be fascinating. Fascinating.
And along the lines of that one,
there's
Killing Joke and Nirvana.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's Killing Joke's song, 80s. Tim English, what year is this one from?
The Killing Joke is from 85.
Okay.
Okay. Wait, Tim, while we listen to this,
let's hear Nirvana.
Okay, I'm sorry, now we're listening to Nirvana. Hey, if you're just tuning in, we're playing snippets of old songs that sound vaguely like snippets of other old songs. Whoa. You're listening to WFMU. So, Tim, how did this begin? Tell me the origin of this book. What was the moment where you said there's a book here?
I had the idea way back when I was in college. I just thought it was a cool topic and just sort of, you know, kept mental notes for many years and finally got around to researching it. And the first edition came out back in around 06. And the edition, 2006 edition, is kind of what I call the kitchen sink edition. It's got everything imaginable, you know, little quirky cases, little oddball similarities, in addition to the famous ones.
And what was the first song that you remember hearing that fit into this category?
I'm a Believer. It sounded, because the Monkees' I'm a Believer sounds very much like the Neil Diamond I'm a Believer.
It's the same
good
song.
Point.
If you listen to especially the early riff.
It's the exact same song.
That's what you're making my point. It sounds very similar.
No.
You're making my point for me.
No, the idea is that they're supposed to be different songs that sound alike.
Oh, you're,
not the same song.
You're embarrassing yourself. Go ahead, Tim.
The first one I think everybody remembers was George Harrison, "My Sweet Lord," and him getting sued by the publisher of his song "He's So Fine."
And
Chiffon.
So you follow what year was that, the lawsuit?
That was 71, I guess. Yeah.
And you were following that, and you said...
Well, I was a tyke at the time, but yeah. I remember hearing the two songs and thinking, you know, it's kind of what the book does is kind of seek to give the readers an aha moment where maybe you've heard a song a million times without realizing that it was based on another song.
Now, George Harrison claimed that it was if he did copy it, it was unconscious.
Well, again, it doesn't matter. The judge said in that case, he said two things. He said it's the exact same song, not only the title phrase, but the part that comes afterwards. And he also said it was unconscious. Now, how we could know that, who knows? George Harrison said that he was actually basing My Sweet Lord on the Edwin Hawkins singer's gospel hit from those days, Oh Happy Day. So,
I see.
And if you listen to those, they're a little
How much
similar.
Money changed hands in that case?
The original settlement that he was ordered to pay was over $500,000 because they took not only what was made by the album, but also tried to see what portion of the album, which was a three-record set.
I would have guessed more. Would you have guessed more?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That case was not settled. That case went back and forth really up until around the time George died, believe it or not, which is 30 years later.
You mean George kept fighting it?
Yeah.
He wouldn't write a check for $500,000?
Because there was stuff going on behind the scenes with Alan Klein. Alan Klein was George's manager. In the middle of the thing, he kind of switched sides from representing George to buying the company that was a publisher of He's So Fine. So
wow,
a lot of lawsuits involved.
We're talking to author Tim English, author of Tim's, Sounds Like Teen Spirit.
Ken's talking at author Tim English. I'm talking with author Tim
Andy,
English.
I just want to congratulate you. You're being on such good behavior. You haven't lost the will to live. You're on top.
No, well, because we have a grown-up.
You're not trying to
sabotage.
We have
a grown-up that drove here to be with us.
And we have calls.
You were excited all day about coming here, weren't you, Tim?
Oh, yeah.
Sure. You told your friends and your loved ones you were coming.
Yes, I did.
You have loved ones listening, don't you?
I hope so.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
We're living a dream. I think I'm speaking for Tim, Ken, and myself.
Absolutely.
I had one. I'm not sure if anybody had mentioned this one. The Smiths' Panic is pretty much T-Rex's metal guru.
Yeah, I've heard that one before.
I've got...
Here's Panic.
That sounds a little like T-Rex.
And here's Metal Guru.
If I agree with you that they sound alike, do I never have to listen to either one again?
Yes.
Then I agree with you.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you,
so
caller.
We're moving
Thanks,
on.
Guys. Go to-
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I have an example for you.
Okay.
Hi.
It's The Joker Went Wild by Brian Hyland and Deirdre by the Beach Boys.
Wow.
Brian Hyland.
Do you know that song?
Joker Went Wild.
And are you now, was this pointed out to you, caller, or did you realize this yourself?
No, I realized it myself.
And what was the other one?
Deirdre.
Deirdre.
D-I-E-D-R-E. By who?
By the Beach Boys.
Oh, you're right. I can hear it. Oh, you're right, that riff right there. Do you remember where you were exactly when you realized this?
And here's...
I was in the car.
You were in the car. It was a day like any other. You didn't know today would be special, right?
No.
And which song came on? Which of the two songs?
The Brian Hyland song came on, and I wasn't familiar with it, but I was familiar with the other one.
This story has something for everyone.
Yeah,
I
can hear that a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you've cracked the case of the Deirdre Brian Hyland plagiarism conspiracy.
Perhaps.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, caller.
Thank you, caller.
Thanks.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, what about Queen, Under Pressure, and Vanilla Ice, Ice Ice Baby?
Oh, yep. That's a big one, right?
Yeah, that was a big one. That was a lawsuit, too. They didn't actually sample it, I don't believe, but they took that bass riff, and that song was... probably sold 10 million copies, though, so that was a big
Which song?
Payday.
Ice Ice Baby?
And I think they added an extra beat. Like, that was the whole argument that Vanilla Ice had.
Yeah, that was Vanilla Ice saying that he added one little extra beat.
But isn't that enough to make it different?
I don't think in this case it was. It's too similar.
Because sometimes Ken repeats his stories over and over, but he adds one little stupid detail. Oh, it was very cold that morning, and he thinks it's a new story.
So that's Queen's Under Pressure, and here's Vanilla Ice, Ice Ice Baby. Oh man, so VIP. So similar. Let's kick it. All right, Andy, did you want to do your thing here?
No, we have all these calls. We're fine. People love the damn show.
Thank you, brother.
Okay.
Thank you, brother.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, this is DJ Kurt.
Hey, Kurt.
Now, is this someone you know personally?
Yeah.
So you don't have to say brother.
It's DJ Kurt.
Well, if you know him personally, you know he's a white guy.
Of miniature minotaurs.
He's never asked me if I'm white.
Well, why don't you ask him now? That's the most polite thing to do. I do it at the beginning of almost every phone call.
Kurt, are you
black?
Are you black? Are you Hispanic? Are you white? Are you Pacific Islander?
I am white, actually.
You are white. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you should have called the white hotline. We have a special number.
Yeah.
You get right through.
Should we activate the white hotline?
No need.
Yeah, not. It's too late in the show.
It's too late in the show.
So I wanted to bring up Prince's 1999 and the Bengals' Manic Monday, which Prince also wrote.
Well, come on, if he wrote both.
Well, yeah, that's...
So, I don't know if he threatened a lawsuit against us.
That'd be a very interesting lawsuit, wouldn't
it? I can't play Prince's 1999 because he doesn't license his stuff to Spotify.
Well, it's on Tidal.
Oh, well.
Phil Collins, the studio, ripped off 1999, and that was the number one hit, believe it or not.
It did. I didn't know.
Yeah, listen to those back-to-back. They're very similar, at least the production of it.
I remember Prince suing himself. It was a very interesting – it broke new legal precedent.
Well, John Fogerty did get sued for ripping off his own songs,
really?
If you remember that case. Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Saul Zaintz was the Fantasy Records guy and then a Hollywood producer.
You mean a different publisher?
Yeah, he owned the publishing. And when Fogerty had his solo album in the 80s, his song The Old Man Down the Road, Saul Zaintz sued him. It was kind of tied up in other legal matters, but sued him for ripping off his own song written for Creedence, Run Through the Jungle.
Oh, man, what a creep.
Wow.
What a creep to do
Incredible.
That. Hey, we have a full phone bank. When was the last time we could say that?
Never.
Love the show.
It's never happened.
Thanks.
Thank you, Kurt.
Thank
Let
you.
Me tell you something. The brothers love our show. Full phone bank.
You're on the air, brother.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, brother.
Staten Island.
Yeah.
I called it once.
I remember. I remember it was a few years ago.
Yeah, when you had the money on the table with the speaker.
We had the money. Oh, yeah, we had the, that was the one we had the table there, then a little money on the table.
And I called in and you just kept asking me if I was still there.
Yeah, Andy doesn't remember any of this.
Okay. No, it was a couple years ago. It was the classic money on the table episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I got two songs for you.
Okay.
I got Start by the Jam and Taxman by the Beatles.
Yep.
Yeah, is that got in your book?
Yeah, it is. Yep.
That's really close.
You didn't stop tinging. Oh, my God.
That's the Jam.
Well, you really get similar with the guitar a little bit.
And Taxman.
Wait, now, are the Beatles litigious? Like, could they? Could George Harrison's estate make a case?
The Beatles have not been litigious. In almost all cases. You know when they were, though, strangely enough, was with the Ruddles and Neil Innes?
Really?
All those
really?
Ruddles songs? Yeah, they sued Neil Innes.
You're kidding.
Yeah, and to me, those songs are like parodies. You
yeah,
know,
of
they're
course.
Not exactly.
Yeah, there's no melodies.
Wait,
that
I thought parody was a protected speech.
I thought so, too, but they.
The Beatles
yeah,
sued the Ruddles?
Yeah, they did go after Neil Innes, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's
disappointing.
Also, well, that's also the other Python guys were writing some of those songs.
Yeah, well, they did a great job on that.
Yeah,
obviously.
Eric Idle wrote some of those songs.
I mean, wasn't George Harrison a huge Monty Python fan?
He was. He was
George
in the movie.
George Harrison produced Monty Python.
Yeah.
Yeah, he produced, Life of Brian, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He came
because,
in
like, the Ruddles songs, like, I Must Be in Love... I mean, it sounds very Beatles-esque, but it's not ripping off any particular song.
It's supposed to. Maybe there was something personal going on.
Huh. That's the Ruddles I Must
Maybe remember. Maybe one guy was shagging another guy's wife.
Interesting.
Maybe like Neil
Innes
was shagging one of the Beatles' wives.
Ah, you're onto
Conspiracy
something
theory.
Now.
Let me tell you something about husbands and wives. Husbands hate it when their wives shag other guys.
Yes. Yes, they do.
They hate it.
Right. Wives also hate it when their husbands shag other gals.
A good point, Ken. Well put. Good point. This is the kind of stuff I was hoping to get into today.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Bob from Poughkeepsie.
Hey, Bob.
Brother.
Hi, Bob.
Yes. The Doors, you know, right? The Doors song, "Hello, I Love You," is very similar to the Kinks' "All Day and All the Night," and also the Troggs. I Want You, I Need You" by the Troggs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, the Kinks, they use these chord progressions that you hear over and over.
Yeah. Yeah, I have that one in the book on the Doors and the Kinks. Very similar melodies.
You can't stump Tim English. Let me tell you something, guys. You got to get up pretty early in the morning to bring something to the table that Tim English has never seen. Am I right, Ken?
Yes. Thank you, Bob from Poughkeepsie.
Yep.
Hung up on the
You're
wrong
boring.
Question.
You people Sorry. Are boring, Tim English. You're just telling him stories that he's written about in his book. Why don't you call him and tell him, hey, Tim, why don't you read chapter 4 in your own book?
Well,
that's pretty much what they're doing.
We've got a couple good ones. I'm so disappointed
with my listener.
Here's a really close one. Horace Silver's "Song for My Father," later ripped off by Steely Dan.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's Ricky Don't Lose That Number.
Yep. I think that was the first one I ever heard.
Wow. Well, you said wow.
Yeah.
They tried to disguise it with this crazy, crazy opening.
Yeah, that was cut off for the radio version, I think.
Yeah.
Good thing, okay. too.
Yeah, it'll get even more boring soon, yeah. guys. Yeah.
Okay, we got more calls.
Okay.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
We're doing fine, brother. How are you?
Great, brother. Doing well. How about Bruce Springsteen's Radio? I've got two, actually. Bruce Springsteen's Radio Nowhere and Tommy Two Tones' Jenny Jenny.
Yeah, the guitar riff.
5, 7, 8, 9 or whatever that was.
Yeah, people commented on the guitar riff. Yeah. Pretty
and
similar.
I think the, this is going way back, but I think the theme from Peter Gunn, the theme from Courageous Cat,
Oh yeah. But that's almost a parody, almost.
Well, yep. Bruce's Pink Cadillac is pretty similar to Peter Gunn.
The other two are real close. And I think I just heard Taxman on that. You were comparing that with
Yeah,
Batman,
we did
right?
Taxman. Yep.
And Stark by the Gym.
People, we bring this guy in, we bring Tim English in, and our listeners just are boring him.
Thank you, brother.
Our listeners are just telling him about his own book.
Do you get people submitting these things to you all the time?
Yeah, when I do shows, a lot of times people will write in or get a list of them.
How many other shows have you done like this?
None. But interviews.
How are we doing?
Interviews about the book.
How are we doing?
Probably 2,000.
We're doing pretty well, aren't we?
You're kind of adding your unique spin and mirth to the discussion.
Unique spin and mirth.
There we go.
Unique spin and mirth. If we had a law firm, Ken, we would call it Unique Spin and Mirth. I'm sorry, Mr. Mirth is in a meeting. Please hold for Jeremiah Unique.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Have you done a Neil Young song yet?
No. Which one are you thinking of?
The Days That Used to Be.
Oh, that's not really.
Ragged Glory.
That's not really a Neil Young song, is it?
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah.
Hey, speaking of Neil Young, and Tim, you're not going to believe this. I saw a guy that looked just like Neil Young at Cozy.
No way.
Yeah. Neil Young with the long, long hair. Yeah.
Neil Young also doesn't license his music to Spotify, so I can't play it. Oh.
Okay, I got another one.
Okay.
23 Skidoo, the song Coup.
Are you familiar with those?
No, I can't say.
There you go. Our listeners bring the heat.
Here we go. And what's this sound like?
It's a song called Block Rocking Beats by the Chemical Brothers.
Well, that I remember.
Oh, yeah.
Which they did not sample, or so they say.
Okay, this is 23 Skidoo, and this is the Chemical Brothers. Yeah, pretty close.
Yeah, pretty close.
Yep.
If I agree with you...
Yeah.
If I agree with you, will I never have to listen to either one again?
Yes.
Okay, then I agree.
All right, thank you, caller.
Seriously, Ken, you must never play those songs again.
No, I won't. I'm never going to. I've never played 23 Skidoo. I guess I have played the Chemical Brothers once, but I'll never will again. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, brother.
Hey.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hey, guys. Sam Cogan from Brooklyn. I hate giving this guy any kind of airplay, but I couldn't help but think Gary Glitter, Rock and Roll Part 1 and 2, and Bobby Collins, Automatic Pilot are like the same thing.
Are you familiar with those songs?
Yeah, I'm, Gary Glitter I'm familiar with. The other one
Vodka,
I'm not.
Vodka Collins was Alan Merrill's band, I think, before the Arrows in Tokyo. But killer song.
Vodka Collins by the by who?
No, the song is called Automatic Pilot, and the band is Vodka Collins.
Okay.
Oasis ripped off a song from Gary Glitter called Hello, Hello, that they got sued over, had to give him a writing credit on.
Can't find Automatic Pilot, sorry.
Ah, well, check it out. It's
so you're updating your book all the time. You're updating your book as you sit here.
Yes, I am.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, has anybody mentioned Ricky Nelson, Summertime, and the Blues Magoos? That ain't got nothing yet.
I'm glad you brought that up.
I'm ecstatic you brought that up.
Because we were discussing Deep Purple earlier.
And they did it too, yeah.
Yeah, and their song Black Knight, which was a top 10 hit in England, not so much here, but that has that same riff too, exactly out of the Blues Magoos and the Ricky Nelson song. And I wanted to mention Deep Purple guitarist Ritchie Blackmore, when asked what advice he would give to a young musician, had a one-word answer, and he said, steal.
Wow. Great artist steal, right?
That's
yep. Imitate or something like
well,
that.
Yep, that's the true. That's the kind of quote in an interview that comes back to bite you.
All right, thank you, caller.
Hey, if somebody wanted to buy your book, hey, maybe we're selling a couple copies of your book.
Oh, we should have checked the Amazon rating at the beginning of the show and at the end of the show.
Yeah.
Oh, we blew it.
Yeah.
Well, the book is called Sounds Like Teen Spirit, Stolen Melodies, Ripped Off Riffs, and the Secret History of Rock and Roll by our guest, Tim English.
And you can go on Amazon, Amazon.com. Got to say the .com, right?
Or
SoundsLikeTeenSpirit.com. We've got some sound clips up there and a link to Amazon. And the Twitter handle is at Tim English Books for my daily musings.
And do you do weddings or bar mitzvahs or kids' parties? Do you come and play samples of different records?
Yes, I do. And they pay me a lot of money.
Hey, kids, if you enjoy dancing to that record, here's a very, very similar record you might enjoy. That's Tim English DJing at a wedding.
I think we have a caller.
So I spend my weekends.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you on the air?
Yeah.
Not anymore. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, it's Jake from Brooklyn.
Hey, brother.
Hey, Jake.
Hey, brother.
Hey, brother. So how about Link Ray's Rumble and Adam Ant's Killer in the Home?
Oh, that's a good one.
You gotta check
that one. That's a good one. Don't know either song, but that's a good one.
Link Ray's Rumble and who? And what was the other one?
Adam Ant's Killer in the Home.
Killer in the Home. All right, let's check it out here.
You won't be able to tell one from the other.
Here's Rumble.
Which came first, caller?
Link
this
Ray.
This one.
Yeah.
Can't find Adam Ant, sorry.
But
this is a great this is a great song to go out on, so thank you, Jake.
No problem. Thanks a lot.
All right, bye-bye.
Well, this has been fantastic.
Bye.
Tim, is there anything else you'd like to plug while you're here? Do you have any other projects or
No, that's pretty much it. That is my life's work at the moment.
Now, how many books
you have another book out at the moment, right?
Another book called Popology, which came out a couple years ago. It's the music and the lives of some of the four of the great icons of the 60s, the two Kennedy brothers, Dr. King and Thomas Merton. Mm-hmm. And there have been a million books about the music of the 60s, and this is the first one to really look at exactly how it impacted and intersected in their lives.
I don't believe it had any influence at all in that decade.
Well, I think you should read the book before you make that
judgment. No. If I read the book, I might change my mind, which is painful for me.
Don't like to be confused with the facts.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and, thank you, Tim, for coming down. We want to thank Nick the Bard, our call screener.
And Veronica,
Our producer. And thank you, Andy, for being on such good behavior tonight.
You were scared, weren't you?
I was terrified.
You were scared.
I was very scared.
That I would make our guest uncomfortable.
Yes.
The way I make you uncomfortable.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks, guys.
You're
thanks,
welcome,
Tim.
Buddy. Thank
this
you,
is
Tim.
WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount
Can Hope. I make you uncomfortable next week?
Sure.
There you go.
Online
free at last. Free at last. Thank God Almighty we are free at last. Next week, no guests in the studio. I'm off my leash.
Stay tuned for Do It For Me with Sue. Oh, and thanks, of course, to our number one fan, Amy Vogel. Tonight's program was brought to you by Amy Vogel. Stay tuned for Sue.
remember this song. I was, I was 4 years old, and I was in a private school in Huntington Beach, California, and they had some sort of child exploitation live show on stage kind of thing. And so they picked me for some reason to sing this song in Spanish. In Spanish, I sang this song in Spanish as a four-year-old. I was coached by my Mexican neighbor. I was phonetically coached by a Mexican neighbor to sing this song on a stage. You know, it's funny, the things that one remembers, like the minutiae, as they call it, one remembers from their childhood. I mean, that was like 1,000 years ago. Probably the best time in my life ever. Like nothing has like topped that particular moment. The family was together. I was going to private school. And then like a year later, it was all over. Like everything down the toilet. Food stamps, divorce. Everything starts out so promising and then quickly devolves, decomposes. Life can be like that sometimes. Well, it's not like that for everybody. I mean, life has its ups and downs. You can spend like a whole decade in your adult life, like being sucked down into some horrible porta potty of obligations and general mayhem. And then you could spend another 10 years being so bored that you're going to gouge your own eyes out. And, sometimes you'll spend like 10 years doing nothing but having intercourse. That's all you do, is have intercourse and drink maybe a little bit to dull the pain. Something like that. Speaking of dulling the pain, thank you, Andy. Are these, those are a gift for me. Thank you, Andy. Andy Breckman gave me a gift. Thank you, Andy. That's awesome. Awesome and nice. Thank you so much. That was really strange. I wonder if someone told him that I was kind of peeved at him and he's trying to make amends. It's possible. It's possible that this is an amends maker. And if so, I accept. Thank you, Andy. Anyway. So there was some gossip. There was some gossip around that. And this has to do, this is like way behind the scenes stuff. So I'm going to get your opinion, maybe. Maybe you can call in with your opinion. I don't know. There's a bunch of other... It seems that listeners need to be guided a lot on why to call 201-536-9368. Our number here is 201-536-9368. This is Do It For Me, by the way. My name is Sue Braun. Nick the Bard will be screening your phone calls. I've left him a plate of tortilla chips and mango peach salsa. He won't thank me for it. He's not good with that kind of stuff. Anyway, so behind the scenes, we're talking to each other here at WFMU. Is it ethical? Just hear me out. I'm not judging, at least not on the air. Behind the scenes, I'm extremely judgy. The question is, should an unpaid WFMU DJ. Well, you know, I don't know. Perhaps I phrase that too in a weird way. It doesn't matter if you're Wow, that brings up another... Okay, here's the whole thing. Should an unpaid person, a volunteer, hire another volunteer to do the volunteer work for them? Okay, I'm just putting a general sort of thing out here.